Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Women of Strength, we've got a VBAC story coming your way today. We have our friend Grace from Illinois. Are you from Illinois? Where are you? Illinois?
Yeah, I'm right in between Milwaukee and Chicago, right on the Wisconsin-Illinois border.
Okay, awesome. Well, welcome to the show. And she does have a little babe right now with her. How old is your baby?
He just turned a month old yesterday.
A month old? Yeah. And this is your VBAC baby?
Yep, there he is, the man
this
himself.
This is like so fresh. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I love when we get fresh stories. I feel like you're still probably even still processing as you tell your story.
I am. I practiced a couple of times to make sure I didn't leave out any important details.
Well, we're so excited to have you on this show. We do have review week, and then we're going to get into your stories, and then we're going to talk a little bit about when the odds are stacked against you at the end. And then, spoiler alert, Grace is a labor and delivery nurse. And so I'm going to kind of ask her some questions about how it is to be a labor and delivery nurse and supporting VBAC in her community. Okay, so we have this review and its title is Tears Plus Stories Plus Hope Plus Joy equals Education. And it says, I discovered these ladies when I was 9 months postpartum from a very traumatic section and was eagerly beginning to research how to heal and build a new birth team for when my second baby came along. Now, just a few months later, I've listened to almost all of the episodes and I hear the joy and the redemption these mamas have when they are in control of their births, and it spurs me on towards my goal of one day having a successful VBAC. I cry when they cry. I feel joy when they feel joy. I feel sadness when they feel sadness, and encouragement and elation when they succeed. It's been quite the therapeutic discovery, and I'm so glad Julie and Megan created this resource. Each time Megan or Julie directly addresses the audience as women of strength, I get goosebumps, and I know in my heart I am, in all caps, and will be, in all caps, that woman of strength. I hope to one day share my version of success with this community. Okay, that just gave me the chills. So I'm just going to add tears plus stories plus hope plus joy plus chills equals education to that one. Thank you so much for your review. If you have not done so, as always, we would love them. And you never know, you may just be read on the next podcast. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, cute Grace. Welcome. Let's get going into your stories.
Okay, so first of all, thank you for having me. This is amazing. I'm glad I had a VBAC, but it's even cooler that I get to be on the podcast. So my first pregnancy, I had just missed my first period. So I took the test and was positive, called my doctor and just scheduled an appointment that I was about 6 weeks at. At this appointment, my doctor started calculating my due date with his little due date calculator and said, okay, it's about May 26th. I'm going to induce you May 24th. like right off the bat, already decided we were going to be an induction. He said, since you're a first-time mom, it will reduce your risk of having to have a C-section if we schedule an induction. I later found out he was actually just going to be out of town on Memorial Day weekend, so he was kind of pre-planning that for himself. But I didn't know any better. I was like, okay, cool. I'll know when I'm having the baby. I don't have to worry about going into labor or anything. So pregnancy went by, no complications, nice and smooth. At 39 weeks, he addressed again. We'd be going in for an induction, and that he'd just do the Cervidil. So I went in that night or that morning, and they placed the Cervidil and told me, don't move, lay as flat as you can. You can only get up to go to the bathroom, which is not true. So,
No,
so I'm laying there, yeah, stiff as a board.
hashtag
Yeah.
false.
I lay there all day. They take the Cervidil out and it didn't do much for me. I wasn't favorable in the first place. I was like closed, thick, high. And then he checked me after the Cervidil and said the same thing. And actually, he told me he's never done this before, but he's just going to discharge me. He didn't want to start anything else or do anything, which I appreciate him not, just pushing Pitocin when he didn't think it was going to be a good idea. So we left feeling super discouraged that we told everyone we were going to have a baby and now we're going home. So he said, just come in a week later. If I don't go into labor naturally, just come in and we'll try again. So I didn't. We went in the following week. They put in the Cervidil again. They actually did two rounds of it this time. And this time we didn't tell anybody we were going to the hospital. We just didn't want the, is the baby here yet? All those questions, adding to the anxiety of already, all the anxiety of being in labor. So they took the second round of Cervidil out and still didn't really have any change, wasn't contracting or cramping or anything. But they just let me stay there. I ended up going into labor naturally, which he, I don't know if I don't have this statistic verified, but he told me only 20% of people will go into labor with Cervidil alone. Most people will need the Pitocin or something else, some other intervention to actually cause labor. But my labor started. Again, he didn't give me Pitocin, which again, grateful for. So I was contracting all day. I have a pretty low pain tolerance. So I had requested something for pain. They gave me an IV pain medication that I didn't really like. It worked for a little bit, but it also made me feel very strange. So the nurses were like, okay, instead of getting more of the pain medicine, we just recommend you get the epidural. This was about 12 hours after the contraction started. So I did get the epidural. I was still only at like a one at this point. They checked me after the epidural and he broke my water without really telling me that that's what was happening. It just kind of happened and he broke my water. And then I pretty much immediately went to like 5 centimeters after he did that within the hour. I was like, okay, cool. It's finally happening. I'm at 5 centimeters. I don't feel any pain from the contractions. I have this epidural that's working maybe even too good because I couldn't even wiggle my toes. But baby's heart rate started dropping then. And this was a kind of like a back and forth. Are we going to have a C-section? No, just kidding. You're fine. You can push later on. You'll dilate about 1 centimeter an hour is what they told me. But then they also came in, had me sign consent form for C-section. They put oxygen on me, were repositioning me a little bit. And they just called the C-section. So we went to the OR that I had not even toured during our hospital tour. Cause I was like, I don't need to see that. I'm not having a C-section. So I don't need to see what the OR looks like. But then ended up in there. My husband was in the hallway waiting to come in. The anesthesiologist was super supportive. She could tell I was kind of losing it. They brought him in and the procedure itself went fine. There's no complications. Baby came out healthy. She had a cord wrapped around her foot twice, which the doctor said he thinks maybe that's why she didn't come down, but I'm not sure. They took her over to the warmer, did all of her checks and everything. It felt like she was over there forever. And then they brought her swaddled over to me. We did the little cheek to cheek, skin to skin, got our classic C-section family photo on the OR table with our scrub hats on. And then my husband and daughter left the room and they finished putting me back together. Then they took me to recovery, which I was in there by myself. I had really bad like shakes from the hormones, epidural, I'm not sure, but I was shaking like crazy. that felt like I was in there forever by myself. And then they finally brought her to me. She latched straight away, so at least I got to breastfeed her, but we completely missed our golden hour.
Yeah. And you were alone, left
Yeah, I was
alone
alone, and
in
for
a
some
very
reason,
scary time.
yes, the nurse like wasn't really talking to me. She was charting and stuff, which I get you got to chart, but I felt very alone in this recovery room. So all that being said, everything did go okay. It still did not feel great that I had to have a C-section instead of my, planned birth. I had my birth plan and everything. So the next morning, the doctor did come in and he told me my next pregnancy or my next baby, I'd have to have a C-section. He's like, you can do all the research you want and you can see that the statistics are small, but I still would not give you or let you have a child labor. Like, you would be an automatic C-section.
Did he
So,
actually say, like, okay, well, the statistics say this, but for you, no.
no, it wasn't just me. He just was, that's how he
He
practiced.
just
He,
doesn't support
yes.
VBAC.
And he told me that a friend's wife tried to be back and had some kind of complications. I don't know how it ended.
Okay.
So it sounded like it was also a personal thing. He didn't
Yep.
do them for personal beliefs.
Yes.
So he left the room, and that's when I found your page. I started searching VBACs and how I could have one. I was so discouraged not being able to deliver vaginally. I was like, I gotta at least inform myself and see if I can find a way to do it and how to go about it. Knowledge is power, so I wanted to know as much as I could going into it. So the I had my daughter, things, you're busy with the baby. So I didn't do too much research in between. I just saw it's ideal to wait like 9 months before you get pregnant. So I did find out I was pregnant at about 13 months postpartum. And this was actually 2 days after I got offered a job as labor and delivery nurse. So I kind of all have a little bit of excitement all at once. So 13 months postpartum. Oh, and the whole time my husband was very like, he's after he saw my recovery, he's like, okay, I'm gonna help you and whatever I can do to help you have a VBAC, because I know that was he knew it was very hard on me. I found a doctor. I just was like, I'll just see doctors and feel them out. And my first doctor I saw was super VBAC supportive. He said they do them all the time. I'm a great candidate. And so I was like, okay, I'll stick with these guys. My husband did a bunch of research too. He was like looking up like why people get induced, why you may or may not want to get induced to avoid having a C-section, all these things. He was like my biggest cheerleader. He came to the appointments with me and was like making sure our provider was as supportive as we needed him to be to try and make this happen. So I also became obsessive. I was listening to the podcast all the time on my way to work. If work was slow, I'd throw on an AirPod and do laps around the unit to just be moving and hear the podcast. I was listening to it in the shower all the time. And I found it really helpful just hearing other women's stories. So at 37 weeks, this pregnancy went by pretty complication-free. I did have some bleeding in the beginning, which was just a subchorionic hematoma, and they weren't concerned about it. So I actually didn't tell people at work that I was going to VBAC because our hospital doesn't allow for VBACs because we don't have on-call or we don't have
Anesthesia.
in-house anesthesia or OBs. So I didn't tell them and I didn't want them to know I was trying. They would even ask me like, oh, are you scheduling your C-section? I'm like, I just haven't scheduled it yet. So just kept working. 37 weeks, I started all of the anything I read online that could make labor happen, I was doing. I was having the raspberry leaf tea, pineapples, dates, walking, primrose oil. I was doing everything you could do to try and get my cervix ready to have a baby. So at 39 weeks, we went to an appointment. I did start losing my mucus plug, which made me very excited that something was happening on its own. This appointment, I had a different provider. This practice had multiple doctors that you could potentially be on when you deliver, so you're supposed to kind of see them all. So I saw a different provider this time. He checked me. I was just a fingertip. They were going to maybe do a membrane sweep at this appointment, but he was unable to. And then he kind of mentioned, okay, if you get to 41 weeks, we'll talk about scheduling your induction. And I was like, oh, whoa, I thought we weren't doing all that. It's supposed to, like, you could they could seem VBAC supportive the whole pregnancy, and then at the end kind of flip the switch, and I felt like I was like, oh no, I'm stuck. I've been seeing them the whole time. Now he's going to try and push an induction on me. But So I left that appointment feeling kind of worried. After that, my husband was like, you should just chill out, stop obsessing over all the thing. I had a checklist, said like, eat your dates, eat your pineapples, go for a walk. It was all the things, and it was kind of causing me more stress than like actually letting my body do anything on its own. So I stopped. I even stopped listening to the podcast. I was just like, okay, whatever happens, happens. I went on maternity leave too, so that no one at work would ask me. I just took my leave early. And then on my due date, I went in. I was dilated to a one, which was incredible news for me, and 50% effaced. I was like, wow, after all that Cervidil, nothing happened. And this time, something's actually happening. So he was able to do a sweep at this appointment. And we did an NST too. He just said it's a protocol. Once you hit your due date, they do NSTs. So I felt great. I contracted and cramped kind of all night. I was like, oh, maybe it's happening. But this was really just the start of some prodromal labor that went on and off for a while. He said that I went into an appointment on Monday after that Friday, and he said, as long as I agree to just keep coming in for NSTs, he said that he'll let me go as long as I need to. They weren't worried about induction. It was a healthy pregnancy. They weren't worried about baby, his size, or anything like that. So he did another sweep that Monday. That also caused me to kind of cramp and contract. I was hand expressing as well to try and get my milk supply to come in. So I was regularly contracting. There are not, I shouldn't say regularly, but it was happening. And so I thought my next appointment, like, I'm going to be really dilated now because this has all been happening. Everything's happening all now. So they went into that next appointment. This was a different provider again, a woman who she checked me, and I was a two. So that was exciting as well. She said she wasn't able to do a sweep because the other doctors already did it. And her fingers aren't long enough so that it wouldn't be effective. So I was like, okay, whatever you say. And
She's
then
like,
she sat
wait.
down and asked, so if you do have to have a C-section, what is your mental state going to be? Because it is a possibility, which I knew it was, but at this point of my pregnancy, I just didn't even want to hear the word C-section. So I told her it would probably be, I would be okay. I know my eyes are wide open. I know it's a possibility, but I would feel pretty discouraged that I wasn't able to have a VBAC. And she told me if I did have a VBAC, I wouldn't be able to pick up my daughter for at least 2 weeks. So that really also freaked me out because she said,
If you did have a VBAC,
oh
you
no, I'm
wouldn't.
sorry. If I had the C-section, I
Oh,
would have
I
to
was
wait at
like,
least
wait,
2 weeks
what?
to pick her up.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
sorry. And then I
Like
was
a
like,
weight restriction.
yeah. She's like, you don't want to like pop your incision, which makes sense. But I'm like, I'm already bringing a new brother into her life, and now I'm not going to be able to pick her up. Like, that really scared me. So I wanted to have my VBAC.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
So after this appointment, I was 41 weeks when I went to this appointment. And that night, I had been contracting, starting around 8 p.m. pretty regularly, but they were spaced apart, like 5 to 7 minutes. And then around midnight, the contractions became 3 to 4 minutes apart. They told me I could go to the hospital when they were like five. But I was worried that it would slow down my labor. So I kind of waited a little bit longer, went in and out of the shower, took a moment to kind of like hold my daughter and lay with her for a little bit, you know, thinking, okay, we're going to bring a baby home soon. It's happening. So we called my in-laws around 4 in the morning to come over. They were regularly like 3 to 4 minutes apart for quite a few hours. They came over at 5. We got to the hospital at about 6. And it happened. My labor slowed down. The contractions went to 6 minutes apart. When I got there, I was only 2 centimeters, which I was in the office that morning. So I was like, how is this possible? I just contracted for all these hours and nothing happened. I did a face a little bit more. I was 70%. So they said, we're just going to watch you for a little bit. We're not going to send you home. Of course, it started snowing when it had been 70 degrees all week, but that's the Midwest. So they're like, we'll just wait. We'll watch you. Hang out here. It's snowing. We'll see what happens. So I've just was sitting on the yoga ball, already pretty exhausted because I had been up all night. And then at 9 a.m., the doctor came in and she's like, okay, I'm going to break your water. And the nurse was like, whoa, hold on. We don't have an IV. We were just kind of watching her. She like, let's get some other things in place before you break the water. Before she did break the water, I was very hesitant about them doing that because I wanted it to happen naturally. I didn't want them to force anything and then also be put on a timer because I at our hospital, if your water's broken for X amount of hours, then it becomes like, okay, we got to get this baby out. And I didn't want that. She said, no, they wouldn't be worried. They might start worrying if I developed symptoms of infection, but that still wouldn't necessarily mean I need to have a C-section. They would just treat the infection. So I did let her break the water, and then they checked me 6 hours later. Again, I didn't make any change, but the contractions had been more intense for me, so I ended up getting the epidural about a half hour after that, around 3:30. Once I got the epidural, I was feeling good. They told me they kind of wanted to start Pitocin, which I was hesitant about that as well because I know it does increase your risk of uterine rupture. Not that the percent is that high, but I wanted to avoid it if I could. But they told me I'd be on a different protocol because I'm a VBAC or TOLAC patient. So they would go low and slow, and they would start at 1 and keep it slow. Anytime they did go over 2, though, baby didn't like it. His heart rate would drop a little bit. So they did end up kind of turning it on and off all day, but the contractions still stayed pretty spaced apart. Around 10, they did check me, and I was a 4, and his head was low. I was having some bloody show. They shut off the Pitocin because the contractions are every minute apart.
Oh, it's a
Yeah.
little cross.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Couldn't tell because I had an epidural, but they also placed the IUPC. And they did an amnio infusion, which we don't really do much at our hospital. So I was pretty unfamiliar with it. And she explained that they wanted to just replace my fluid because I had been ruptured for a while and baby kind of needs some fluid to help come down and help me dilate. So they did that. I feel like I had all these wires going everywhere. After a little bit, I did end up getting a fever. They gave me some IV antibiotics. So with all these things happening at my hospital, I would have been a C-section for sure. So I could tell they were very VBAC supportive. They came in and repositioned me so frequently because his heart rate would drop and the nurse was in there all night. I was like, this poor nurse is in here every 5 minutes repositioning me or doing something for me. So around 1 in the morning, I felt such intense pressure, and my epidural had worked really well, but I was feeling all that pressure of his head. And she didn't want to check me because she said, we don't want to be in there too much because you
You've
have an
already got a
infection.
fever.
So they waited, but this pain and pressure was pretty intense for me. I was like crying through the contractions. It felt like my body was pushing for me. So I was like, can you please check me? Like I know that you don't want to, but I'm feeling like something's happening. I ended up throwing up, which could also be, baby's getting ready to come out. So they did check me at 6 in the morning. I was 10 centimeters. She called the doctor to let her know and said, this was also the doctor that had my last appointment with, who didn't sound super on board with me
The
having a
short
VBAC.
finger one.
Yeah. Little fingers.
Yeah, little fingers.
So I was like, I really hope she's not on. And she what they were like, she's on for 24 hours. I was like, okay. So she was the one, she's like, let her do a practice push and then I'll be in there soon. So At this point, I had been in so much pain from the pressure all night that I was like, I don't even think I can push him out. Like, I'm like a first time mom, basically, because it's my first vaginal birth, and I could be pushing for 2 to 3 hours. And I was like, I don't know if I have it in me. And I said that to my husband. I'm like, I don't know how if I can push. And he's like, well, don't be discouraged. If you have to have a C-section, you have to have a C-section. And that kind of lit a fire in me. I was like, no, I did not just go 31 hours of labor to just call it quits. I'm like, I'm gonna at least try to push and see what happens. So I do one practice push, and the little guy's heart rate drops and doesn't recover for like 6 minutes. So everyone's rushing in, the doctor, the hospitalist doctor, all the nurses. They're like, don't be discouraged. You did everything you could, but we're probably gonna have to have a C-section. The doctor goes, I think your uterus is rupturing, which I'm like, okay, that's scary. Like, don't tell me that. I'm like, and what is even making you think that? So she's like making a little note in the computer. They're putting in all the orders for me to go to the OR. And she said, but if baby's heart rate recovers in the OR, we'll let you push in the OR, but we want everyone around to make sure that if we do need to have a C-section, we have the whole staffs ready to go. So they wheeled me in. Were giving me like meds in the hallway, like while I'm on the way in there. The nurses were super comforting though. One of the nurses told me she tried to Tolac with her second and ended up having to have a C-section, and that it's nothing to be ashamed of, like, which it's not. I just really wanted to do it, and I felt like I did. Up until that point, I did everything that I could. So they wheeled me into the OR, and the anesthesiologist, he said he partially blocked me, gave me like one third of the dose that they would give for a C-section, but I felt very numb. Like, I could not feel the contractions, I couldn't feel my legs at nothing. They hooked me up to the monitor, and his heart rate recovered miraculously. He was like in the 150s. So they said they wanted me to push. And I also had kind of already thrown in the white flag mentally and said, I don't know if I can push. I'm scared now that I kind of froze up. I was like, I don't want to have a C-section. I don't want to push. I'm just like in this limbo right now of I don't know how we're going to get this baby out. They told me they wanted to use a vacuum, which initially I was kind of like, I don't really want you to use a vacuum. But the hospitalist said it would help us get baby out faster for while I'm pushing. And I did finally consent to them using the vacuum. So we're in there. The nurses had to tell me when I was contracting because I couldn't tell. And they had this audio of my monitor on, but they couldn't see the strip for some reason. So they were just palpating my belly to tell when I was contracting. And they would say, okay, push now. So with four contractions and the help of the vacuum, I did push and got baby out successfully. And
Just four?
yeah,
Just
four contractions. I mean, I know I kind of cheated with the vacuum, but
that's pretty dang fast, though, I feel
I know
like.
that's what I thought. It was like 10 minutes of pushing, and he came out with copious amounts of the fluid that they had replaced. And I had said I wanted him to be skin to skin if I could. And he came out good. So they put him on my chest. They actually let me reach down and feel his head while I was pushing, and that kind of really motivated me to get him out. So the nurses were so helpful, and so was the doctor. I don't think I could have pushed him out as good as I did if they weren't literally like rallying around me, like, you got this, you're doing great pushes, he's almost there. And then got him out, and I got to hold him. And then they said, let's just take him to the warmer for a little bit. He swallowed some fluid, but they were reassuring me the whole time. And then they ended up letting him come back to me. I got to wheel back to the room with him. With me, which was so exciting for me. I got to breastfeed right away, and we went back to our postpartum room as a family. And I just remember being like, it was such an emotional roller coaster at the end. Like, I prepped so much for VBAC. Oh, I'm okay. Just accept the fact you're having a C-section. Just kidding. You get your VBAC. So everything, I feel like there were so many like junctions where it could have just been like, okay, we have to give you a C-section. And then we ended up getting lucky and having the baby. And I feel like I could not have done it without the nurses and doctor and all of the information I learned from this podcast. So seriously, thank you guys so much for what you do, because you make such a big difference in people. people's lives. And that night I got to pick up my daughter and lift her up and show her new brother in the hospital. And it just felt like I was so happy. And a month out, I'm able to move. I don't feel like myself again, but closer than I did when I had my C-section. But this all went like so great. And I'm so glad I got to do it.
Oh, well, I am so glad too, and I am so grateful for you for sharing your story, for being here with us. It's always fun to hear that we were in people's ears along the way. And man, you know, it's so hard. We were talking about in the beginning, like this, the odds stacked against you, like this happening, and it could also go to this, or the baby's heart rate drops, and then they do this, and then this happens. You know, there's all of the things that could go wrong. But along the way, you seemed like you were making the choices that felt best for you, even when it might have even been like, oh, hey, we're going to come break your water. And it might not have been exactly what you want. You ultimately felt good about it. So let's talk about that. When someone comes in, or if it's like, well, VBAC isn't supported in this hospital. Maybe that's your only hospital. That's a really hard one, right? So how do you know, like in your hospital that you work in now, you kind of said, if that were my hospital, I would have gone for a C-section, or they don't support it. So what do people do in your area when your hospital doesn't support it?
They definitely don't support it. They would just automatically schedule you for a repeat cesarean. And if we did get a patient in that was in labor, we would probably transfer them, or we'd have to make sure that the OB that was on is close enough to get there. In my short amount of time that I've been there so far, I did see one VBAC. They made an exception for her. The OB stayed overnight, and so did the anesthesiologist. So they and she ended up VBACing and having a big baby and everything. I feel like the odds were kind of stacked against her too. But they, other than that, I have they don't try to do it. And since they don't do it, because we don't have the resources, a lot of the staff there just doesn't, like, I guess you could say, believe in
Believe in it.
VBACs. And they have kind of a lot of, so like I said, I didn't tell anybody I was VBACing, but I would hear them talk about VBACs, and I'm like,
You're like,
I
ooh.
can't tell you guys that I'm doing this until I succeed at it, and then I could be like, haha,
What did
it
they
is
say?
possible.
What did they say?
They were like really glad that I got it how I wanted it, 'cause they did know I was very, it was a rough recovery for me, and I really didn't, I told them like the C-section was really hard on me and our family. So they were like, I'm glad you got to do what you wanted, but
Well, when the odds are stacked against you, and the odds are always looking different for everybody, right? Sometimes it's advanced maternal age, big baby measuring, over our due date, special scar, be back after multiple cesareans. I mean, there's all the things that can be stacked against us. But when we're in an area that isn't super supportive, it's good to know that they would even transfer them and be like, actually, we're going to transfer you to this hospital. But you can transfer hospitals. You can, of course, if you decide to explore home birth, you can try to find a different provider within that hospital. Because if that hospital is supportive, but then that provider's not supportive, there are things we can do. So I'm going to have a link for a whole bunch of blogs on, ways to find supportive providers, what to do, also how to decide if a VBAC or a C-section is right for you. Because I think that can be really hard when you have a location that's not supportive. It sometimes is easier, quotes, to just make the other decision and go along with it, right? So, okay, so labor and delivery nurse, you're relatively new, but how has it been? How do you feel like birth is in your location?
I feel like it's good. They do a lot of inductions there. A lot of the patients, they'll say like, let's induce you around 39 weeks. And initially, my first like over a month of orientation, I actually didn't see a vaginal birth. I only saw
Really?
C-sections. Yeah. It was very common. I don't know if I just got in and like was unlucky. I don't know. Maybe it was the shift I worked, because I worked 3 in the morning to 3 p.m. So I was like, maybe,
Interesting.
because I'm not sure, but I was like, I would really like to see a vaginal birth, because I,
I'm hoping for one.
exactly. And I was pregnant then. I didn't tell anybody, but it was nice working like while I was pregnant and being able to actually learn a lot more while I'm working about labor. I could watch my contraction strip and kind of know what it means. There's a, it kind of helped me have more knowledge to going into my own situation. And then I felt like I was pregnant forever. So at the end of my pregnancy, I'm like, oh, they were due after me and they just had their, they had their baby and everyone was having their babies and I was over there still pregnant. But I'm like, I'll just grow him as long as I can. And when he's ready, he'll come out. So.
Well, I love that. I love that you've been able to learn. I think that's one of my favorite things too, just being a doula. Obviously, I'm not there actually charting those strips or anything like that, but it's been really fun to learn that that strip better. And then like what a lot of the times babies, because we can tell babies' positions sometimes based off of those charts, right? If we've got coupling contractions and things like that, we might know that a baby is in a little wonky position. So, well, huge congrats
Thank
to
you.
you. And if you decide to go back to the labor and delivery route, I wish you all the luck. And I'm sure that you'll be cheering people on and supporting and helping them along the way.
Yes. And now I can help them better because I went through a C-section and a vaginal, and now I can kind of relate
And
to all the
relate.
patients and what they might
Exactly.
need.
Absolutely.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to the vbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.